Hi, everybody, and welcome to Unified, a podcast feed from First Church Belmont Unitarian Universalist. We'll be sharing sermons and stories, special thematic content made new every week. We're so glad you're here, and for more information about who we are and opportunities to grow and deepen, swing by the church on Sundays or check out our website at uubelmont.org. And for now, enjoy this new content.
Good morning, friends. I am so happy to be here with you all on this Sunday. As an aspirant for UU Ministry and in my role as coordinator for congregational activism at UUSC, I get to preach in a lot of different UU congregations. And let me tell you, each congregation does things a little bit differently, which makes sense. I mean, we UUs are kind of known for loving to argue and disagree about practically anything. There are even UU jokes about it. Some of my favorites are: a Unitarian Universalist died and to his surprise discovered there was indeed an afterlife. The angel in charge of these things told him, "Because you are an unbeliever and a doubter and a skeptic, you will be sent to hell for all eternity, which in your case consists of a place where no one will disagree with you ever again." The second one: visitors on a tour of heaven noticed a group of Unitarian Universalists who were arguing about whether or not they were really there. And my last one: a visitor to a Unitarian Universalist church sat through the sermon with growing incredulity at the heretical ideas being spouted. After the sermon, a UU asked the visitor, "So how did you like it?" "I can't believe half the things that minister said," sputtered the visitor in outrage. "Oh, good, then you'll fit right in." Honestly, I love pretty much all UU jokes, but especially the ones about how much we love to argue and disagree about things. We have eight principles and an infinite number of ways to interpret them. We agree on a lot, but we love to get into the nitty-gritty about what we aren't so sure of. And I think we can all agree that as a faith, we actually like being unsure. We lean into it, and that's a beautiful thing. We understand that we're a learning and not a learned faith, and that healthy disagreement produces growth and keeps us from being dogmatic about the things that we, and in fact no one, can know for sure. However, there is one thing that solidly connects all UUs. In every single congregation, there is a chalice, and that chalice is lit to begin worship. Now, you might be thinking, "I thought this worship was going to be about how our faith calls us to support our trans beloveds in these times of fascist threats against their humanity. The chalice and UU jokes don't have anything to do with that." Well, first, to come full circle, I disagree. And second, I promise I will explain more, and maybe something that never happens in a UU service will happen today. You all will end up agreeing with me. It's the chalice itself, the very thing that binds all UUs together, that most strongly calls us to the work of resisting the criminalization of our trans and gender expansive beloveds. You see, our chalice, as sacred as it is to us now, wasn't always the symbol of the Unitarian and Universalist faiths. In 1940, Reverend Dr. Charles Ryan Joy was sent by the newly created Unitarian Service Committee, the predecessor of the current UUSC, to Lisbon, Portugal, which was the only open port in Europe at the time and was the preferred port for the many refugees that were fleeing the Nazi regime. Many of the refugees had to flee without any of the identification papers required to cross borders. So Joy decided to start making identification papers issued by the USC itself. This was uncharted waters, but instead of focusing on the risks that he and the organization might be taking in doing this, Joy focused on saving the lives of those fleeing fascism. He also decided that the papers needed a seal to look as official as other travel papers. And so he asked Hans Dutsch, an Austrian refugee and artist working in Lisbon, to create one. And the result was the basis of the Flaming Chalice as we now know it. While this was happening, by the way, Waitzel and Martha Sharp were also sent to Europe by the USC, and they not only falsified documents to get people out, but also laundered money if necessary. So you see, the thing that binds us all as Unitarian Universalists, the chalice, was founded on our commitment to human rights and to resisting fascism. Since the founding of the Unitarian Universalist Service Committee, we've been committed to supporting the work of liberation, even when, and maybe especially when, it involves making holy trouble for the powers that would deny anyone's full humanity. Okay, friends, let's take a nice deep breath together. This is where we're going to get into the heavy stuff. So I want to invite you all to do whatever you need to do to care for yourselves and stay grounded as we proceed. If you need to stand up and stretch, walk to the back of the sanctuary, look at your phones, yes, even that, please listen to your body's needs and follow them. I promise I won't be insulted. Talking about the present nature of fascism in our country can be incredibly triggering for anyone. To my trans and queer family in the room, this invitation especially goes out to you. So to understand what fascism is, I want to reference the work of Jason Stanley, who's the author of How Fascism Works, The Politics of Us and Them. Stanley is a professor and scholar of philosophy and propaganda at Yale. He describes fascism as an ideology, but more importantly, as a political method. Not all who use fascist tactics are ideologically fascist. We recognize fascists less by their beliefs than by their methods. I'm going to share Stanley's overview of the 10 tactics of political fascism. What I'm sharing with you now is taken directly from Stanley's work, at times word for word from a video lecture he gave titled The 10 Tactics of Fascism, which is available on YouTube, and I highly recommend watching it after the service. Stanley opens by explaining that these 10 tactics are bundled, that they can't be isolated from each other. The first tactic is creating a mythic past. Fascists always present the idea that there was once a glorious past. In politics, this is presented in the idea that we were once a great nation. Notice the past tense. And when we were great, the dominant group ruled over the others. But now that's been taken away, not lost by our own actions, but taken away by some group designated as other. Jason Stanley says fascists are always telling a story about a glorious past that's been lost, and they tap into this nostalgia. So when you fight back against fascism, you've got one hand tied behind your back, because the truth is messy and complex, and the mythical story is always clear and compelling and entertaining, so it's hard to undercut with facts. The second tactic is propaganda. All social movements and all politics use propaganda to persuade. Fascist propaganda, however, makes a distinction between friends and enemies. It casts the other as a threat and presents the idea that these others are fundamentally opposed to the nation. Tactic three is anti-intellectualism. Authoritarianism presents a cult of the leader. In a fascist system, the leader and only the leader sets the rules about what is true or false. So we see the takeover of the country's media, schools, and cultural institutions to enforce what the leader says is true. Institutions that teach multiple perspectives on history always threaten the leader. Expertise is also a threat to the leader. Science is a threat to the leader. If intellectuals are telling the truth, they are a threat. So anti-racism, critical race theory, definitely a threat. This brings us directly to tactic number four, the creation of a form of unreality. The scholar Timothy Snyder talks about this a lot, the destruction of notions of reality. Authoritarians undermine what we know to be true and convince the population that A, everyone is lying, and B, that lies don't matter. In political terms, the center of democracy is truth. You cannot function as a democratic citizen if you're being lied to. The fifth tactic of fascism is hierarchy. Hierarchy is absolutely central to fascism. It is the big lie at the center of things. White supremacy, male supremacy, able-bodied supremacy, these lies assign people superiority and the privileges and benefits that go with that superiority. Hierarchy goes right into victimhood. Once you've convinced people that they are justifiably higher in the hierarchy, then you can convince them that they are victims of equality. Fascists tell people that equality is victimizing them by making them lose their rightful place of power. Stanley says the goal is to make people feel like victims, to make them feel like they've lost something, and that thing they've lost has been taken from them by a specific enemy, usually some minority outgroup or some opposing nation. According to Ajeris Dixon, writing in Truth Out, fascists believe that democracy has failed them and allowed the majority to be tyrannized by communities that have no right to power. Therefore, fascists seek to eliminate both democratic processes and marginalized communities to return to that often fictitious and glorified past where their power reigned unchecked. The seventh tactic of fascism is law and order. Under fascism, the definition of law-abiding means loyalty to the dominant group. Members of the dominant group, by their very nature, are considered law-abiding. Marginalized groups are seen by their very nature as not being law-abiding. And law and order has nothing to do with justice or equality. Law and order structures who is legitimate and who is not. And law and order will ultimately be enforced by violence. Tactic 8 is sexual anxiety. In every case, across cultural and historical settings, the fascist leader will say, "Your women and children are under threat. You need a strong man to protect your families." Fascists make conservatives overwhelmingly terrified of transgender rights and gay, lesbian, and bisexual people and their families. According to fascists, these targeted groups are not simply trying to peacefully live their own lives. They are trying to destroy the majority's lives, and they're coming for the majority's children. Stanley calls the ninth tactic Sodom and Gomorrah. Fascist movements typically rest on an urban-rural divide, and fascists use the toxic trope of the biblical story of Sodom and Gomorrah. In this trope, pure, hardworking, real members of the nation live in rural areas where they work hard with their hands. But when politicians talk about inner city voters or urban voters, we all know what they mean. Black and queer folks, immigrants, Jews, and other people that fascists seek to control or eliminate. The tenth and final tactic is what Stanley, a child of Holocaust survivors, calls Arbeit macht frei. Work shall set you free. Those words were hung over the gates at Auschwitz. Fascists create an idea that minorities, immigrants, and others are lazy, that these groups need to be taught a work ethic, that the mechanism they use is forced labor. Whether it's prison labor or work requirements for benefits, the targeted groups must provide free labor as a supposed moral education. According to fascists, labor unions are communists who are trying to make things easier for these lazy people. College students who protest conservative speakers are described as lazy, spoiled kids who need to get real jobs. And the thing is, the end game of this calculation is pure evil. Valuing people by how hard they work means that the elderly, disabled, and even children can become disposable. The Nazis murdered these groups first because they believed that those who could not work had no value. Is it any wonder that we're now seeing the repeal of child labor laws in this time of rising fascism? Those are Stanley's 10 tactics of fascism, very long quote over. Friends, let's take another deep breath. And please remember to breathe before I remind you, just through everything. No doubt, you recognize many, if not all, of these tactics at work today in the United States and around the world. Currently in the U.S., anti-LGBTQ rhetoric and legislation seems to be one of the few issues that brings disparate factions of conservatives together, and right-wing politicians are leaning in hard. 38 states currently have anti-transgender legislation on their books, with the number of new bills growing by the day. The ACLU is currently tracking 484 anti-LGBTQI bills that are in process for this 2024 spring legislative session in various states. Most of them are anti-trans laws. There are also 38 national bills being proposed. These bills threaten our trans and gender expansive beloveds in many ways, but the most concerning are through trans genocide, through legal definitions, which would seek to erase trans folks from public life and remove any protections they may have legally. The expansion of anti-LGBTQI propaganda laws, which apply to libraries, schools, and even the internet. And child custody and removal laws that would allow the state or other family members to take children from trans parents or from parents who are honoring their child's gender identity. The lies and misinformation surrounding these bills are abhorrent. These bills are trying to legislate trans and queer people out of existence. And please know that this is not hyperbole. We know that this is the ultimate goal as well because of Project 2025, which is the right's published plan to reshape the executive branch if they win the next presidential election. One of their first acts would be to institute a nationwide don't say gay policy through executive order. Because of these laws, trans people in the United States now meet the definition of internally displaced people by the United Nations. Hundreds of thousands of trans people and their families have already fled their homes for safer states, with more than a million considering doing so. So let's take another breath. There are so many questions we can ask ourselves in light of the current situation. What do we do? Who do we want to be? How do we resist and find joy even in times like these? I think many of us have looked back at times like the Holocaust and have thought, if I was there when that was starting, I would have done something. Well, folks, we're there. What is the something we are going to do? What is the something you are going to do? Early in 2023, an organization led by trans activists approached UUSC and asked if we could help trans folks relocate to safer states. They saw the work that UUSC has been doing with congregations in supporting asylum seekers and wondered if UUs had the networks, infrastructure, and desire to support a different kind of asylum seeker, ones driven from their US-based homes and communities. In this work being led by trans activists, we are in an interfaith coalition with Quakers, Jews, Mennonites, the United Church of Christ, and more. We're exploring partnerships with mutual aid networks and people of no faith and anyone else who is saying, no, I will not let this happen, not on my watch. We're working together to create networks of safety and direct support for trans beloveds and their families who need to relocate, access healthcare across state lines, or stay as safe as possible where they are. Because of safety concerns for these trans organizers and the people they're serving, we're prioritizing their security above all, which is allowing us to move in deep trust during these crucial, frightening times. This is why I'm not sharing the name of the organization that's leading this work or any details about passengers or our processes. Instead, we've come up with the name Pink Haven Coalition to talk about this work as our stage name. Acting in coalition together for trans liberation is a direct antidote to the rising fascism we see in the United States. Whenever we resist fascism and injustice, we weaken them everywhere. Know that as you support our trans and gender expansive beloveds to not just survive, but thrive, you're also supporting all others that are targeted by fascism, and that includes us, and you are helping to heal the world from the sin of dehumanization and oppression. So here are three important ways that you all could get involved in this critical work and support trans liberation. First, talk to me about getting involved as a volunteer. We're looking for people to be part of villages of support when folks relocate to Massachusetts. We need hosts to offer space in their homes, and we need volunteers to provide support in navigating government programs, accessing healthcare, finding employment, and establishing social connections. By joining forces, we can provide a safer exodus and a welcoming community for those settling in our area. The second way you can help is make a gift. These efforts to support our trans beloveds require financial resources. Your contributions will help us address the practical needs of those seeking sanctuary, respond to any emergent needs, and set them up for success in their new lives. The First Parish in Malden, my home church, has generously offered to act as fiscal sponsor for this work. Please know that all donations in their entirety are moving directly into the hands of trans-led organizers and being used to support trans and non-binary people in accessing the resources they need to survive and thrive. If you can, I encourage you to give as abundantly and courageously as you're able by visiting pinkhaven.org and clicking donate. And third, skill up. We're all in different places on our justice journeys, and that's okay. Some of us here are trans or gender expansive, and this is your lived reality. Others of us may be new to the wonderful world that awaits beyond the gender binary. For those of us who may not fully understand all the terms and complexities of gender and maybe worry about not saying the right thing or not knowing what to say, I urge you to lean into your discomfort and support these folks anyways. Explore resources that increase your competency in this area. Reach out to me if you need some ideas. Pretty much nothing would make me happier. Join me after the service in coffee hour to chat about this work, about how UUSC is resisting fascism generally, or really anything else. I'd love to get to know you better. And keep your eyes open for opportunities for being in solidarity with our trans and gender expansive beloveds. Friends, the forces of fascism in our nation and in others around the world are only going to grow more brazen in their quest for power. It's up to us to pay attention, disrupt the violence, and remain true to who we are as justice-loving people of faith. As the late John Lewis advised, do not get lost in a sea of despair. Do not become bitter or hostile. Be optimistic. Never, ever be afraid to make some noise and get in good trouble, necessary trouble. We will find a way to make a way out of no way. So I'm calling all you holy troublemakers to join us, to rise up and say, we will not fall in line. We will not let this happen. We will make so much holy, troublesome noise that we will drown out the sounds of hate and fear and fascism. Together, we can and will find a way out of no way. Now is the time. We are the ones we have been waiting for. Amen, ashe, and let it be so.